Dear friends, by now you may have heard that we are in the middle of an exciting raffle. The details of this raffle can be found on www.suburbanorthodox.org/raffle. Through the shul and the institute, we have the privilege to deliver a wide variety of shiurim, lectures, and learning opportunities. But we need your help. We need your partnership. When you purchase a raffle ticket, or many, you are helping us to continue to ensure that we could spread the beautiful and meaningful message to literally all four corners of the world. Thank you in advance for your help, and much hatzlacha. All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So I wanted to, I know it's our last shir of the semester and our topic has been Perek Shira, but I wanted just to, I came across something I think incredibly powerful, overwhelmingly powerful in the Parsha, Parshas Naso. And so I wanted to focus a little bit on that for this last class. We also dedicate our learning this morning. Today is the 5-year anniversary since the abduction and murder of the three young boys in Eretz Yisrael, of Ayal, Yifrach, Gilad, Sher, and Naftali Frankel, were abducted and murdered again on June 12th, 2014, exactly 5 years ago today. And their death, a horrifying experience for Klal Yisrael, but also an incredible unifying experience for Klal Yisrael. You know, the amazing part of our people, one of the amazing aspects of our people, is that we have such a capacity for unity and togetherness. But for whatever the reason, we seem to only activate that incredible koach in times of tsar, times of heartbreak, times of difficulty. The secret to our success is to find a way to tap into that unity when it's not in the midst of catastrophic loss and terrible broken hearts. But the unity, the achdos that these three boys generated for all of Klal Yisrael, I could only imagine the benefit that it gave to their neshamas and the benefit it gives to each of us. So we should dedicate our learning li'iloi nishmasam. And we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu should give a nechama to their families and should the merit Hashem spare Klal Yisrael from further tzaros. And with that, I want to introduce you this morning to the Nazir. So this week's Parsha, many things occur in Parsha's Naso. Amongst them is the individual who's called the Nazir. So very quick crash course in Nazirus, although we'll get into some of the technicalities in just a bit. The Nazir is an individual who decides to go ahead and abstain from wine, grapes, grape products. Why does the Nazir do this? Good. I don't know what you said, but it sounds correct. Right? At the end of the day, the Nazir is someone who's seeking out more Kedusha in life. He's just seeking to go ahead and just do something different. You know, sometimes in life, you have that feeling inside your heart that things have to be different. Things have to be different. Something has to change. I'm not sure exactly what has to change. I'm not sure how it has to change. I'm not sure when it should change, why it should change, but I just know that things have to be different. And so I just have to start doing things differently. I don't know if the way I'm going to do it differently now is I'm going to do it differently going forward, but I know in this moment, I need to somehow change things up a little bit. That's the Nazir. The Nazir is a person who realizes that life just has to be a little bit different than the way I'm living it. And so he makes the decision to engage in this neder nazirus. He abstains from wine, from grapes, and also from coming in contact with the dead. He is enjoined, he is prohibited from encountering any type of tumas mez, ritual impurity from a corpse. Which means, again, of course, he can't go to a cemetery, he can't attend a levayah. So with that backdrop, we pick up with number one. The Torah says, V'chi yamos meis alav bepesa pitom. Something amazing happens. Suddenly, well, let's just use the English translation. If someone in his presence dies unexpectedly or suddenly, v'time rosh nizro, and the nazir therefore contracts ritual impurity, becomes tamei. What's the halacha? V'gilach rosho b'yom tara, so b'yom hashvi'i galchenu. So the nazir goes ahead and shaves his head. On the day of his purification, on the seventh day, he shall shave it off. Let's just read the psukim, and then we'll go back and explain a bit more. On the eighth day, Yavish de Torim Oshnei B'nei Yona, he'll go out and bring two birds, ala koin al Pesach al Moed, vasa koin echad lechatos, vi echad la'ola, v'chiper alav me'ashechata ala nefesh, The kohen will go ahead and offer up these birds. One is a chatas, a sin offering. One is an ola, a burnt offering. And the kohen will go ahead and atone for him. V'chiper alav me'asher chata al hanefesh. The kohen will atone for him, will atone for the nazir, because he sinned regarding the nefesh, regarding coming in contact with a corpse. V'kidesh es rosho bayom hahu. And literally, the nazir will sanctify his head on this day, or on that day. V'hizir la'ashem o esimei nizro, v'vikeves ben shnasol li'asham, v'hayomim harishonim yiplu. The first days simply fall aside, ki tamei nizro. Because ultimately, again, he went ahead and defiled his Nazirite-ship. So what's happened over here? Very simple case. The Nazir, someone dies in the presence of the Nazir. Nazir's minding his own business. He's standing in a house with someone. Someone passes away. What happens in that moment? He becomes ritually impure. As a result of him becoming ritually impure, his entire Neder Naziros, his entire period of Nazirite vow, Nazirite kite, comes to an end. It's done. It's done. He brings sin offerings, and he has to start the entire process all over again. He's got to start all over again. What's interesting to note about this is as follows. Take a look at number two. So Rashi says over here that if you notice, again, the Torah uses two words. V'chiyamos meis alav. So literally again, the Nazir is minding his own business. And what happens? Someone dies. Bepesa pit'om. Now, pesa pit'om is literally unexpectedly or suddenly. Now, what's there between unexpectedly and suddenly? In English, at least. No real difference. No real difference. Yet we know that at the end of the day, the Torah chooses its words very precisely and specifically. So Rashi HaKadosh points out in number two that there is a significant halachic difference. Bepesa means ze ones. Ones refers to unexpected circumstances, uncontrollable circumstances. Pit'om is shogeg. Shogeg means what? An accident. What's the difference between a shogeg and an ones? Accidental versus unexpected. So this is incredible. You know, the paradigmatic example that the Torah gives of an accidental occurrence is a person goes into the forest to chop wood. And what happens? As he's chopping wood, so the Torah discusses, again, he accidentally kills someone. How does he kill someone? Either a splinter from the wood that he's chopping goes and kills someone, or the axe head falls off and kills someone, flies off and kills someone. So what's the halacha for such a situation like that? He goes to Galus. He's sent to exile. He's sent to the Ir Mikla, to the city of refuge. So the Gemara Maseches Makkah says, I don't understand. It's an accident. There was no premeditation over here. Obviously, the axe wielder did not have in mind to chas v'shalom hurt anyone, let alone kill anyone. So the Gemara says something amazing, and these are life altering words. The Gemara says, "Di'iboy le li'iyune." He should have paid attention. Jewish law does not recognize accidents. What do I mean by that? Say a little bit differently. Jewish law does not free you from responsibility in the realm of accidents. Even if you accidentally hurt someone, you accidentally damage someone, you are 1,000% unequivocally responsible for what you have done. Di'iboy le li'iyune. You should have been more careful. In a halachic sense, we reframe that statement to mean Adam muad li'olam. A person is always considered to be forewarned. This is an incredible idea and an incredible insight into the Judaic concept of responsibility. We believe in personal responsibility to the nth degree. I'll tell you something even more amazing. This is just an exaggerated example of this. If you're sleeping and someone puts something right by the side of your bed and you go ahead and you roll over onto it and you end up breaking something that belongs to someone else, on a technical level, you are responsible. If I'm responsible? Yes. Even when you sleep, Adam Muad Li'olam. Now, don't start questioning Shilas based on that. I'm just giving it to you for illustrative purposes, but it's an incredible insight into the way Judaism views personal responsibility. I just want to point something out to you. If society would take their cue from us, the world would be a very different place. Because especially now in contemporary society, everything is about deflecting responsibility. Everything is always someone else's responsibility. Someone else has to own this. Someone else has to fix this. In Yiddishkeit, responsibility is all mine. So that's when it happens by an accident. But there is something called an ones. Ones means there is no way I could have possibly controlled these circumstances. No way. Absolutely impossible. Nothing I could have done to prevent this. So the Torah is describing two different scenarios. Scenario number one is the Nazir becomes tameh by accident. What's an example where it becomes tameh by accident? Someone passed away in a home. The Nazir didn't know. He accidentally walks in. He could have asked, right? He could have asked, is everyone alive in the house before he walked in? He could have asked that question. And I guess if you're a Nazir, maybe it's not exactly a little bit of a morose thing to say. But she comes in, that's an accident. He walked into a house where someone had passed away. Ones is something different. The Nazir, we'll call him Ruvain, is talking to his friend Shimon. Right? Shimon's right there. Shimon Chas Hashem suffers a massive heart attack and he passes away right there. So what's the halacha? Torah tells me, sorry Ruvain, your entire Neder Nazirus is gone. You have to start over. But here's the interesting part about this. The interesting part is the Torah seems to assign some level of guilt to the Nazir as a result of this. How do we know that the Torah assigns some level of guilt to the Nazir? Because remember again, if you look at the offerings that the Nazir has to bring, he brings two birds to the Kohen. V'asa Kohen echad lechatos, v'echad le'ola. One of the offerings is a chatos, which is a sin offering. So the question is obvious. Why does the Nazir have to bring a sin offering for circumstances beyond his control? I understand maybe for the shogig, for the accidental part, perhaps the Nazir could have been a bit more vigilant. He could have paid a bit more attention. But for the extenuating circumstances aspect of it, what more is there for him possibly to do? But more than that, even leaving aside the sin obligation, even leaving that piece aside, there's another fundamental issue, which is the Nazir is a person who is trying his best. The Nazir is a person who's trying to lift himself up. An unfortunate circumstance occurred. Someone passed away. Whether the Nazir came in contact with that person ultimately, accidentally, or through extenuating circumstances, why the need to start all over? That's a dramatic thing, to start all over again. Remember again, the Nazir, a Nazirite vow at a minimum lasts for 30 days. So that's no wine, that's no going to Levayas. It sounds like a little thing, but it's not an easy lifestyle choice. I understand if the Nazir purposely defiled himself, why there would be a need to start again. But for an accidental, certainly for extenuating circumstances, A, why is there a sin offering? And B, why does he have to start all over? So here the commentaries go in many different directions. Take a look at number three. So Rashi understands over here, Me'asher chata ala nefesh, shelo nisar mitumas hames. So Rashi's understanding is, listen, you should have been more careful. Accidents are avoidable. And maybe even in Rashi's worldview, maybe even extenuating circumstances are avoidable. Maybe you limit your contact with people during the time of your Nazirite vow. I'm not sure what Rashi exactly would have the individual do, but Rashi nevertheless understands that halacha lamaisa, practically speaking, you should have been more careful. And because you weren't, therefore you start all over again. The Chizkuni in number four writes, Me'asher chata ala nefesh kitargumo shelo nishar milikanes ba'ohel meis. So Rashi and the Chizkuni both understand over here, simply Nazir, you should have been more careful. Should have been more careful. You allowed yourself to ultimately be exposed to a corpse. I'm sorry, you should have been more careful because you weren't more vigilant. You have to start again. Asks the Medrash. I don't understand. Me'asher chata ala nefesh. The Torah says that the Nazir has to start the duration of his Nazirite vow all over again. Why? Because he sinned. He sinned regarding a corpse. He allowed himself to be exposed to ritual impurity. Tutumo. V'chi be'ezer nefesh m'chata zeh. Says the Medrash, come on. What did the Nazir do wrong? V'halomeis bepesa pitom. The other person died immediately, just died without warning. What was the Nazir to do? So look what the Medrash says. Something dramatically different. Ela shetzir atzmo min hayayin. That's not the sin of the Nazir. The sin of the Nazir is that he deprived himself of wine. You should not have deprived yourself of wine. Ulefi shetzir atzmo min hayayin nikra chote. And because he went ahead and he deprived himself of wine, he's called a sinner. So the Medrash understands as follows. What's unfolding over here is not a punitive measure against the Nazir for having contracted ritual impurity, for having contracted tumah. That the Nazir is not punished for. Why is he not held liable for that? Why? It was an accident. It was an unavoidable circumstance. So what is the sin offering for? The sin offering for is, who told you to become a Nazir? Who told you to abstain from permitted things? Who told you to create new prohibitions for yourself? And the Medrash is echoing something here in the Gemara. If you take a look at number 6, so the Gemara says, V'chiper alav me'ashachata ala nefesh, amra baye. Shimon HaTzadik, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lozer HaKafar, Kulon Shita Achas Hein, the Nazir Chote Havi. They're all of the opinion that the Nazir is a sinner. Now what does that mean, the Nazir is a sinner? None of them take kindly to the concept of becoming a Nazir. They all feel a person should not become a Nazir. Shimon HaTzadik, Rabbi Shimon HaDa Amran, Rabbi Lazar, HaKafar, skip a little bit. V'chiper me'ash, 3 lines down in number 6. V'chiper me'ash sher chata nefesh. So the Gemara quotes this pasuk. That the Nazir has to bring a sin offering to atone for his soul. V'chiper eza nefesh chata zeh. Ela shetzir atzmo min hayayin. So this is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. What is the Torah saying? The Torah saying is God tells us an incredible idea. There is already enough stuff that is prohibited. There is already enough stuff that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is usur. There is absolutely no need to make more things usur if you don't have to. There is no reason to add on additional layers and levels of prohibition onto a religion that already has multiple layers and levels of prohibition. And therefore, Nazir, the Torah does provide for this outlet called the Nazir. So you ask yourself, so if becoming a Nazir is so bad, why does the Torah allow for it? What's the answer? Because sometimes people need a dramatic change in their life for course-correcting activity. Remember again, the Nazir follows immediately after the section of the Sota. The Sota is the woman suspected of adultery. So the Torah discusses over here what's the nature of the juxtaposition, because people often get themselves into trouble and compromised situations because they're lax in certain areas. Lax in certain areas. Sometimes we're lax in our social interactions. Socialization is absolutely fine, but socialization always has to be appropriate, especially when it's socialization between men and women. Wine is fine. Wine is wonderful. Wine is part of every single thing we do in Yiddishkeit. By the way, every single thing we do. Today, you know, wine, it's part of a bris, it's part of a marriage, it's part of every Shabbos and Yom Tov. We don't follow this practice anymore, but the Gemara Maseches Moed Katan says there used to be something called a koshel tanchumin, which was a big glass of wine that was given to mourners when they came back from the cemetery. So wine literally is part of every single aspect of our life cycle, from birth until death. But it has to be consumed responsibly. Because if not consumed responsibly, and not with the right people, a person could get themselves into all kinds of difficult and inappropriate circumstances. So sometimes in life, you have to make a hard stop. Sometimes you have to say to yourself, you know what? My life is going in a direction that I don't want it to go in. And so I have to do something dramatic to swing the pendulum back the other way. We all have moments like that where you just have to like slam on the brakes. No one likes to slam on the brakes, but sometimes you have to in order to avoid a collision. Right? Slamming on the brakes is not proper driving. You're supposed to keep, what is it? Whatever it is, two car lengths, right, between you and the vehicle in front of you. But again, sometimes if you're just getting dangerously close, you have to slam on the brakes. The nazir is the slamming on the brakes. The nazir is a person who says, my life is spiraling out of control. I have to do something dramatic. But the Torah tells us, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, and this is incredible, I don't like that. I don't like that piling additional prohibitions where they are not necessary. If you need to do it, fine. As an individual, if you need to do it, I respect that. But as a lifestyle and as an approach to spirituality, that is not the right approach. And understand how incredibly powerful it is. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, chumras are fine. Chumras are fine. We all need chumras. We all need stringencies in different situations in life. But never confuse a chumra with a halacha. Now, and by the way, I have to tell you something. This is so incredibly important. Because at the end of the day, there are so many, especially our younger members of Klal Yisrael, who become so disenfranchised with organized religion when chumras become the accepted normative path. And when chumras are presented as halacha, it's wrong. It's inappropriate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've given you plenty of Isurim. There's enough prohibitions to go around, right? Enough prohibitions to make even the most starkest individual feel happy. So don't pile additional stuff on. And this is incredibly important. Just even when we teach Yiddishkeit. And again, this is not our topic for today. But I have to tell you, like, there's not a day that goes by that I don't see this in some way. A well-meaning teacher. And again, it's a scary thing, who will say something to an impressionable group of young women or of young men. It happens much more with young women. And they'll present something, which is their personal hashkafa, and an incredibly exaggerated stance on halacha, and will present it to impressionable young minds. And those young girls who are listening to this will say, well, I don't know, my mother doesn't do that. Right? We don't do that in my family. I never heard of that. My friends don't do that. But you have a very well-meaning teacher, right, who is imparting something with such passion and such poison, such this. It's not halacha. Now, sometimes that teacher herself might not know it, or himself might not know it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, be careful. The Torah is beautiful. The Torah is pleasant. The ways of the Torah are magnificent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us a Torah that we could live with. Not a Torah that stifles us. Not a Torah that suffocates. Not a Torah that feels overwhelming. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you need to become a Nazir? Fine. Fine. I'm not happy with you. Isn't this incredible, right? You would think God would be doing proverbial divine backflips for the Nazir. Ah, look at the Nazir. He's becoming so holy. Not only will he only drink night, he won't drink non-mavushal wine. He'll drink no wine. Incredible. A tzaddik. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I'm actually not happy with you. You need to do this? That's okay. Get yourself straightened out. Slam on the brakes. Go ahead and get some course-correcting activity going on. But this is actually not what I like. This is not what I like. I like normal people. I know normal is a very subjective term, right? I like regular people. I like the kind of people who could drink wine, but know how to drink it, with whom to drink it, and in what amount to drink it. Those are the kind of people I like. I like people who know how to exist in a world, in a society, who are mu'uravim abrios, knowing how to keep their ideas and their ideals, never compromising on one aspect of their religious identity, but are still able to get along with all kinds of people, interact with all kinds of people. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us. So he allows for the nazir, because sometimes you have to slam on the brakes, sometimes you have to engage in dramatic activity to get your life back on course. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I just want you to know, you're a chote, you're a sinner. Nazir, you are a sinner. What you're doing is not correct. I got it, you need it. You know, there's a concept of an Avera Lishma. Don't try this at home, right? But there is a concept, ultimately, again, of doing an Avera for the highest and most exalted of reasons. Right? Esther Hamalka is the paradigmatic example of this, of an Aveira Lishma. There are, again, like I said, don't take this and do anything with it. But the idea of an Aveira Lishma generally is for Atzalas Klal Yisrael, when there's something of national importance. There is a concept like this. Nazir, says the Gemara, is an Aveira Lishma. Person engaging in a lifestyle that God does not want, but he understands that you need it. So therefore, again, in this school of thought, which is really, again, the Medrash and the Gemara, so we're understanding over here that the sin offering really has nothing to do with the Nazir's sudden exposure to ritual impurity. But rather, once he has become ritually impure, and therefore, again, the Nazirite vow has come to an end. And now, by the way, because it was interrupted prematurely, so what has to happen? What has to happen? He has to start again. Remember again, on a technical level, so becoming a Nazir is a neder. A neder is a vow. When you make a vow, you have to go ahead and carry through on it. If a person made a neder to be a Nazir, and that neder was interrupted because of exposure to a corpse, so the first section of Nazirus ends, and he has to repeat it over again. So in that moment now, where one came to an end, and he has to repeat it all over again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, bring a sin offering. Not because of the exposure to ritual impurity from the corpse. Bring a sin offering because you really should have never done this to begin with. And now not only have you done it, but now you have to start all over again because it was interrupted. If you look at number 7, in the Sefer Toldos Yitzchak, Toldos Yitzchak was written by Rav Yitzchak Karo, who was a nephew of Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, lived in Tzfat. So Toldos Yitzchak asked this question. He says, if you skip down a little bit, skip to 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. He says, "Umishameis pito miodesh yamos shema lishayamar alav shahayaroi sheizar mitumasmeis." So essentially, what the Toldos Yitzchak is asking is the same question: is why would you call this Nazir a sinner? At the end of the day, there's no way he could have known that somebody was going to chas v'shalom die right in his presence. There's no way that he could have avoided ultimately exposure to this corpse impurity. Not only that, v'gam l'svaras Rabbi Elazar HaKofar, shama shetzir atzma min hayayin, im kein lama kara kadosh, shachote eino kadosh ela hafcho. So here's the problem, says the Toldos Yitzchak. Okay, Gemara, you're telling me now that he brings a sin offering because he's a sinner. Because he literally afflicted himself by denying himself of wine. Here's the only problem with this. The same Torah that demands that the Nazir bring a sin offering also calls him Kadosh. Also calls him holy. Rabbi Yitzchak says, so Toldos Yitzchak says, Sanu, which one is it? Which one is it? Is the Nazir holy or is the Nazir a sinner? So he says something amazing. He says, the answer is, it's both. Vinucha lahashiv shemitzat echad hu kadosh. I am 2, 4, 5 lines up from before it ends. Shemitzat echad hu kadosh, umitzat echad hu chote. On one hand, the Nazir is holy. On the other hand, the Nazir is a sinner. Why? Mitzat nafsho hu karov, shahanefesh shleimusa, kishetibadl mitaivas haolam, vaguf shleimuso, bishelo yibadl mitaivas haolam vikse acharon. Ella, shia be'em tso'o, Ba'achila, ubishtia, v'yochal basar, v'yishtayayin k'ray l'briya skufo. So this is amazing. Says the Toldos Yitzchak, we're all familiar with this incredible tension and this tug of war between the body and soul. Toldos Yitzchak makes this a bit more pronounced. As far as the soul goes, what's best for the soul? To distance oneself from physical pleasure as much as possible. Right? That's what's best for the soul. To merit the soul is a spiritual force. So the soul says, distance yourself from physicality to whatever degree possible. The more distance from physicality you are, the stronger you are. On the other hand, what does the body require? The body requires a well-balanced diet. So understand, in the eyes of Chazal, the Gemara understands, it's amazing. In Maseches Gittin, the Gemara goes ahead and discusses maladies, right? Illness, sickness. In general, Chazal, their knowledge of medicine is reflective on whatever contemporary society said about medicine. In other words, in Chazal, the Gemara, whenever the Gemara talks about remedies, those remedies are not like halacha l'moshe misinai. Those remedies are Chazal telling us whatever was the contemporary consensus of the time. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Sefer Tzadik Livracha, says that one is not permitted to implement Talmudic remedies today. Why? For the simple reason that chances are they don't work. For example, like the Gemara talks about, if a person has migraines, right? So what do you do for migraines according to the Gemara? Right? You cut open a rooster and you put it on your head. So I happen to think it definitely works, and I'll tell you why. Because I think if you have a dead rooster bleeding out on your head, you forget about everything else, including your migraines. Right? So remember again, bloodletting. Bloodletting was a big thing. So Chazal Gemara is filled with discussions about bloodletting. Again, that's reflective of contemporary society. One of the other things that comes up over and over again is Chazal constantly extol the reparative or healing powers of fatty meat and undiluted wine. So this apparently was like the breakfast, lunch, and dinner of champions. You know, this was, if you have a well-balanced diet of fatty meat and strong wine, Baruch Hashem, I don't know if it cures everything, it certainly makes you feel good, right? But so what the Todos Yitzchak says is like this. There's this tension and the struggle between body and soul. The soul says, for me to become strongest, I need you to push yourself away from physical pleasures. The body says, in order for me to impact this world, I have to be strong. I have to be strong. I have to be well-balanced. I have to be well-fed. I have to be well-maintained. And therefore, says the Todos Yitzchak something amazing. Imkein, meet last three lines, meet our last two lines. Mitzad ha-nefesh ha-mishakeles ha-nazir nikra kadosh. Therefore, from the soul perspective, the nazir is called holy. It's called holy. Why is a nazir called holy from the soul perspective? Because from the soul perspective, remember, he's going ahead and the nazir is distancing himself from physical pleasures. When you distance yourself from physical pleasures, you're placing more emphasis on your spirituality. So from the soul's perspective, the nazir, is kadosh. Umitzad aguf, but from the body's perspective, nikra chote. He is considered to be a sinner. So therefore, this is how the Todos Yitzchak reconciles this. Is the Nazir good or is the Nazir bad? Is he Kaddish or is he Chote? It depends on whose perspective. From the soul's perspective, becoming a Nazir is incredible. From the body's perspective, ultimately, again, he's a sinner, which is also incredible because you see from here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, places an incredible emphasis on our physical health as well, on our physical well-being as well, which again is part of the beautiful cornerstones of Yiddishkeit, which is why we are not an ascetic religion. There are religions that believe that in order to become holy, you must deny yourself every physical, carnal, pleasure, desire, want. We don't believe in that. We believe ultimately, again, in moderation, and we believe ultimately again in uplifting all of those things to become something holy. So that's why again we don't deny ourselves food, we don't believe in celibacy, any of these things which other religions seem to advocate as a way of pushing yourself away from the body. We say no, embrace the wants and the desires of the body, just uplift them. So is the Nazir Kadosh or is the Nazir Chote? It depends whose lens you're looking at him from. From the lens of the soul, he's a kadosh, holy. From the lens of the body, he's a chote. But then comes the Rishoner, Rabbi Solo Virgin, and turns this entire discussion on its head and sees something dramatically different in these psukim. The great tzaddik Rabbi Solo Virgin writes as follows. Yodeh sharav ha-kadosh ha-beis Yisrael. That's Rabbi Solo Virgin. Hayamar belo chiyach mipsukim elu. She'ein lo la'adam lehis ya'ish klal. The Rishoner sees something different occurring in these psukim. And the Rishoner says, from here we learn never to give up. What does that mean? I'm going to read a few lines and we'll translate them. So watch this, says the Rishoner. Who is the Nazir? Leaving aside, sidestepping for now the whole discussion. Is a Nazir good? Is a Nazir not good? Kaddish, Chote, body, soul. One thing is clear, which is why do you become a Nazir? To become holy. That's clear. There's only one reason a person would undertake this particular vow and that is to make myself holier. That's the only reason I'm doing something like this. There's no other reason. So let's play this out. The Nazir decided to make this dramatic lifestyle change. No levayas, no wine, no contact with the corpse, no get all this stuff. All this stuff. And remember again, becoming a Nazir also costs you money. See, this is the part often we don't think about with these halachos. When the Nazirite vow ends, you have to bring offering. You have to bring karbanos. Karbanos cost money. There's a financial investment in this also. There's only one reason a person is doing this, which is to move himself forward. I want to be holier. So now let's play this out. The Nazir undertakes this vow. And then suddenly what happens? He's minding his own business. And then what happens? Someone dies. Literally right in front of him. Under the same roof as him. If you're the Nazir, what's going through your mind? I have to start all over again. What else? Come on! Not to the guy who died, right? But come on. Ribono Shel Olam, I don't understand. I am just trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to move my life forward. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be holier. Help a brother out. Right? What's going on over here? I'm just trying to be better in my life. And this is what you do to me? Again, I'm trying to be holy. I'm doing something good. And you orchestrate these events. That this person, again, I'm very sorry for the loss. I don't mean to be callous and insensitive. Right? Baruch Dynamis. But really? Couldn't wait 2 minutes when I was going to be out of here? Right? Couldn't wait 5 minutes that I would know? Somebody couldn't tell me before I walked into the house? Such this strange confluence of events. I'm trying my best to move my life forward and to be better. Why can't you help me out? And more than that, says Rabbi Yisrael of Rajin. You know what a person could begin to think to themselves? God clearly doesn't like me. Shmuel doesn't like me. Here I am. I'm trying to come closer. And I'm trying to come closer in a dramatic way. I've slammed on the brakes of life. I'm trying to refine and uplift myself. And all I need for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, I'll do the heavy lifting. All I need you to do is one thing, which is what? One thing. Don't let anyone die right in front of me. That's the only thing I need from you. I will do everything else. Just don't let anyone die right in front of me. My whole life, no one's died right in front of me. I've made it this far. Now suddenly I become a Nazir, and punct, right then, someone drops dead in front of me. Says Rabbi Yisrael of Rajin, a person can begin to think to themselves, but pesa pitom, all of this happens out of nowhere. Wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu must really dislike me. Here I am trying to do the right thing. And the moment I begin to do the right thing is the moment that life becomes ridiculously complicated. Before I became a Nazir, no one died in front of me. Before I became a Nazir, everything was just fine. I decided to make myself holier. And in the moment that I make that decision, suddenly my life is filled and fraught with complications and difficulties. Says Rabbi Yisrael Rishon, Re'ei, person can think to himself, I'm sorry. Ki af achar shenit mahanazir bepeta pitom. Remember again, what's the lashon of the Torah? The Nazir just became tummy suddenly. Such a happenstance occurrence that someone dies right in the presence of the Nazir. Umitivo shel olam yekansu bo hirhure yeush. And the nature of the world, the nature of people, is when this happens to the Nazir, what's going to happen? He's going to have thoughts of yeush. Sha'omrim lo re'ei. God doesn't want you. God doesn't like you. And what's the proof? The proof is the moment that you try to bring yourself closer to God, what does God do? He pushes you back away. And there's a clear indication of this. It's not that shot that you made a wrong turn and you ended up in the cemetery. Literally, again, someone just died right in front of you. What are the chances of that? That's divinely choreographed and orchestrated. Hari lecha, shemen ha-shamayim tim'ucha, shelo tucha lihizar lishamim mitumazos. Clearly God wanted you to become tameh, so that you should not be able to continue your Nazirite vow. So again, in this moment, where the Nazir becomes tameh bepesa pitom, out of nowhere, the most natural way for the Nazir to feel is despondent, and rejected. I'm trying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am trying. And in the moment when I try in such a dramatic way, this is your response. You push me away. You cast me away. You create circumstances beyond my control. So what is the Nazir supposed to do in that moment when he feels rejected? Afapikein. Amra Torah, Vekidesh Esrosho Bayom Hahu. I'll tell you something absolutely amazing. The Torah says that at the end of the day, what happens? After you observe your 7 days for ritual impurity, for coming in contact with a corpse, that's not unique to the Nazir. Every single person who comes in contact with a corpse has a 7-day purification process. That's the paraduma, the whole piece over there. What happens? Right after that purification process ends, the Pasuk says, this is in number 1. You don't have to turn back, I'll just tell it to you. Number 1, the end of verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'kidesh esrosho bayom hahu. What do you do, Nazir? What do you do in that moment of quote-unquote rejection? What do? You get back up, and you try again. Do not wallow in your self-pity. Do not wallow in your perceived rejection. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejecting you? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu not rejecting you? Who knows about why God does the things that He does or how He runs the world? That's not your job to figure it out. Your job is get yourself back together, get yourself back up, and start all over again. Yes, it's true. These events occurred b'pesa pitom, out of nowhere. And again, if you're a thinking person, the only logical conclusion you could come to is God doesn't want my service. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want my neder nezirus. Wow, what a feeling of rejection. Right, what a feeling of not being wanted. What a feeling of being pushed and cast aside. But what does the Torah say? Stop thinking and start doing. Don't wallow in your self-pity because you feel rejected. V'gilach es rosho bayom hahu. Start all over again. Start again. Get yourself back together. Get back on the Nazirite wagon. Start the vow again. Get your life together. And put yourself on the path you feel you need to be. Yelech no. Yazov kol cheshbonos. You know, so much of life is about stopping to think. I should say, not stopping to think. Stop thinking and start doing. People find themselves confounded by analysis paralysis all of the time. What is God telling me? What is God teaching me? What's the message? It's an exercise in futility. You're not going to figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling you or what He wants from you. You can try to figure those things out. But try to figure those things out while you're acting and while you're doing, not while you're engaged in the cognitive processes of trying to figure out how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs His world. It's Pesa Pitom, what the says Rabbi Yisrael of Rajin. And by the way, does this sound familiar to anyone? Just take out Nazirite vow and substitute your own avoda. How many times does it happen in life where a person says, you know what? I'm going to be better. And I decide, I'm going to be better in this, this, and this, or just one this, whatever it is. And that moment I decide, I'm excited, I'm encouraged, I'm optimistic. And in that moment when I decide to propel myself forward, I start encountering challenge after challenge after challenge. And I say to myself, it doesn't make any sense. When I wasn't being so wonderful, life was pretty smooth. Now again, I decide I want to be more wonderful. I'm encountering speed bump after speed bump, challenge, hurdle after hurdle. And I don't understand this. I don't understand the Shbaruchu. What are you doing? And to be honest, I'm beginning to take it a little bit personally because I feel a bit rejected. I'm trying to come closer to you. And as I come closer to you, I feel like you're actively pushing me away. And I don't understand this, says the Rishoner. That's what's unfolding over here. That's the story of the Nazir. The Nazir is the person who wants to become stronger, wants to become better, wants to become holier, is adjusting his lifestyle in order to get to that level. And the more steps he takes forward, he feels pushed away. In this case, by someone dying unexpectedly in his presence. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Sanu, what's the game plan? What do you do in the aftermath or during those feelings of rejection? V'gilach es rosho bayomahu. You know what you do when you feel God has pushed you down? You know what you do? You get back up. You get back up and you try again. Don't wallow in it. Don't lose yourself in it. Get yourself together and just try again. V'gilach es rosho bayom hahu. Start all over. If you turn to source number 9. So taste something amazing. So the Torah says over here something incredible. The Torah says, so that's the first lesson. The first dramatic lesson ultimately is, again, from this little episode of the Nazir, it's not just about the Nazir, it's about life. I would venture to say we all encounter this in different ways. I make that conscious decision to be better, and the more I decide to be better and the harder I try, the more I feel pushed back. And then a moment of failure occurs, and I feel like God is placing stumbling blocks in front of me. And so the response to that is, V'gilach es rosho bayom hahu. Start again. Start again. Don't wallow. Don't engage in self-pity. Pick yourself up. Dust yourself off and try again. Now the interesting part is, what about using the Nazir as a springboard? Okay, so I'm going to take that advice. I'm going to start again. But what about that failed attempt? What do I do with that? You know, sometimes, even if a person finds the courage to get back up and dust themselves off and try again, there's an incredible amount of pain that is associated with that failed attempt. What do I do with that time that I spent? Right? And especially, again, if you look at the Nazir may have been a Nazir for 27 days, right? And then what happens? Nebuch, someone dies right in his presence. 27 days, gone. I have to start all over again. See, in my mind, but we all relate to that, right? I try something, it doesn't work, I fail, I get pushed down, I feel rejected, I'm not going to wallow in it, I'm going to get back up. I'm starting again. What about that failed attempt? What do I do with that? Like, how do I understand that? Sashay something amazing. Take a look at number 9. So the Torah says, this is still the Nazir, but a different context. The context over here is at the end of the Nazirite vow. So this is talking about everything goes okay. He finishes out the Nazirite vow. 30 days go by. He's finished with his vow. He now has to bring his concluding karbanos, his concluding offerings. Vehinif osam ha-kohen tenufa lifnei Hashem. Kodeshu la-kohen al-chazeh tenufa. So again, Torah discusses the various karbanos that he brings, the parts, excuse me, some of which are offered up on the Mizbeach, others of which are consumed by the Kohen. Va'achar yishta ha-nazir yayin. And when all of this is finished, the Nazir could go back and drink wine. And the Al-Sheikh in number 10 asks such a profound question. What's the problem? The Torah says, and when the Nazirite vow is complete, the Nazir could go back and drink wine. Right? The Al-Sheikh, the Pasuk doesn't make sense. Why doesn't the Pasuk make sense? If his Nazirite vow is complete, then what? Yeah, of course he could drink wine. And he's no longer a Nazir. Yet, the Torah still calls him a Nazir even after the vow is complete. Asks the Al-Sheikh, the Dikta, number 10, the Dikta Mefarshim, Madua ne'emar kan hanozir. It should have said, and then the guy could drink wine, whatever the proper biblical term. Again, remember, those terms don't work. If you're a nazir, then what? You can't drink wine. And if you could drink wine, then what? Then you're not a nazir. So you can't say, and then the nazir will drink wine. That does not make sense. But rather, again, it's then either after he finishes his Nadir Naziris, he could drink wine, or the guy, the Ish, will drink wine. And the Al-Sheikh says something amazing. V'alokvar siyem nazirusso, v'shuveinu nazir, shehari nazir eno shosi yayin, v'keita tikra eno nazir bevol v'shosi yayin. It's a good question. Why does the Torah call him a nazir even after the vow has been completed? D'mecheivan, get ready for this. D'mecheivan, shebizman tov kibar atzmo lios nazir, Vesnaig Bikdusha Batara, Lochi Nikra Batora Nazir Avkishe Gamar Naziruso, Kigam Kishu Noflomi Madre Gosso, Nishar Etzlo Minha Kidusha, Shenok Shekana Benafsho, Beis Kabalaso. Says the Toldos Yitzchak something amazing. He says, even though the Nazirite vow is over, and even though again the Nazir doesn't live on the same plane of existence as he did when he was a Nazir, there is a residual impact on the gestalt, on the essence of the person, that remains with him even when the vow is over. You see, the things you do in life leave an impact on you even when those things, quote unquote, come to an end. Look what the Al-Shif says. Mikan Yomad, last line. She'in shum his amtus shal Yehudi ha-ne'evedes v'ne'elemes chas shalom. You need to underline, highlight, bold, make this as a magnet on your refrigerator, because there is no effort of the Jew that is lost or that is obscured, becomes hidden. What the Al-Sheikh says is something amazing. You think that the Nazirite vow comes to an end after the 30 days? No. That avodah, that personal work that this person did over the course of those 30 days, that remains with him even when the vow comes to an end. The things we do in life make an indelible impression upon the people that we are. And if we plug this Al-Sheikh in, we learn something amazing. You see, even the Nazir that we're talking about in number one, whose Nazirite vow comes to a screeching halt, right? Accident, extenuating circumstances, whatever it is. And he feels rejected. And so the Torah tells him, don't feel rejected. Get yourself together, get back up, dust yourself off, and try again. But if you're that Nazir, you're still thinking to yourself, what? What about those 27 days? I just wasted those 27 days of my life. To which the Al-Sheikh says, there is no such thing as a wasted experience. Everything in life we undergo, even the things that don't go according to plan, even the things that are quote-unquote failures, even the things that we wanted to turn out so desperately different, we learn from those events, we grow from those events, and that avoda changes us in a positive way as people. It's true that the first Nazirite vow, this Nazir in question, came to a screeching halt in our example at 27 days. He didn't fulfill his Nazirite vow. Vaharai, the proof to that is, he has to start all the way again. From where? From where? From day one. From day one, a whole new unit of 30 days. But lest you think that that means that the 27 days were wasted, comes along the Al-Sheikh. Even when you finish your Nazirite vow, the Torah calls you. Do you understand how profound this is? All of us experience failure in life. And sometimes the greatest pain of failure, the greatest pain of failure, is not just the pshat that I didn't actualize the goals I wanted, but sometimes the greatest pain of failure is the lost time. How can I ever regain that time? I spent all of this time doing that, and it did not materialize. I spent all of my energy on that, and it did not materialize. Such a waste. And the Al-Sheikh says, Chas v'shalom, there is no such thing as a wasted experience in life. And the truth is, we know this even on a more profound level. Our greatest growth experiences in life are never from your successes. The greatest growth experiences in life are your failures. No one ever said, that success, oh, that was like the springboard to my newfound greatness. Usually it's just the opposite. When people encounter failure, and the more resounding the failure, that often becomes the springboard for something dramatic afterwards. But it requires you not to view your failures as wasted time. I have to ask myself, what can I get from the failed experience? What can I learn? How can I grow? And if we bring this all together, we find something amazing. So failure has these two aspects to it. On one hand, Torah tells us, don't wallow in it. Don't engage in self-pity. Don't live a life, and people do, of woe is me. Get back up, dust yourself off, try again. And yes, sometimes you have to start again from day one. Sometimes you have to start again all the way from the beginning. Part two is, lest you think that at the end of the day, that failure was just wasted time that you got nothing from. You're still a Nazir even when the Neder Nazirus ends. There are things that we learn about ourselves. There are things that we learn about the world. There are things that we learn about life in the aftermath of every single failure. You just have to be willing to learn it. And if we bring these both together, we end off with one last lesson, which kind of brings both of these worlds together. Take a look at number 11. So again, the Torah tells us, Again, this is from a different section of the parasha. And again, the amazing part is this is all contained in this week's parasha, albeit in nuanced fashions. You just have to know how to look for it. But Yom HaShmini, on the eighth day, they start at the offerings of the tribal princes. So the Torah says, Yom HaShmini, Nasi Livnei Menashe. Ultimately, again, there was a tribe, right? The Nasi, the tribal prince of the tribe of Menashe, his name was Gamliel ben Pedatzur. Okay. So understand, the Torah spends a lot of time focusing on the name of tribal princes. We had it in Parshas Bamidbar. We have it again in Parshas Naso. So in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, in Hasidic literature, it's replete with deeper meanings of each of these names and the lessons. So if you take a look at number 12, this is from the Sefer Kedushas Mordechai. Ramosha Mordechai Birman, Delala Vereba. See, he says something amazing. He says, skip to the middle of the first line, Yesh Nesius Rosh, this Romamus, L'chol asher machzikim atzmam kibnei Menashe, shenishkechu kiviyachol, Menashe milashon nosei Elokim, v'choshim shekvar afsa tikvasam, ubema, al yidei shem ischaskim lomar Gamliel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gamliel, I'm just going to read them, then we'll translate, Gelomar Gamli yesh chelek be'elokei Yisrael, azeha ish ya'ane abar v'yomer p'dei tzor, watch this. Go back to number 11 for just a moment. I'll tell you this outside. Yom HaShmini Nasi. Nasi is Lashon Nesius, to lift up. How do you lift yourself up in the aftermath of failure in life? How do you lift yourself up? So the first answer is, you have to be Libnei Menashe. You have to be the offspring of Menashe. Remember again, if you look at number 13, Yosef names his son Menashe. What does Menashe mean? Ki Nashani Elokim es kol amali ves kol beis avi. God allow me to forget all the suffering. All of my suffering and the suffering of my father's home. Did Yosef forget his suffering? Did Yosef forget his suffering? No. No one ever forgets their suffering. What Yosef meant was, God allowed me to let go of it. God allowed me not to wallow in it. God allowed me to move past it. Still always with me, those scars never heal as they never healed for Yosef. But at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed me to move forward. Says the Kedushas Mordechai something amazing. If you want to be a Nasi, if you want to lift yourself up in the aftermath of failure, step number one is B'nai Menashe. You have to forget it. What is, again, not literally. What it means is let go. Don't wallow. Don't engage in self-pity. Don't live a life of woe is me. You have to be B'nai Menashe. And if you do that, then the next level is Gamliel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu still loves me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu still loves me. Even though sometimes it feels like I'm being rejected. Even though sometimes it feels like I'm being cast away. Even though sometimes it feels like I'm being divinely marginalized. Gamliel. I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu still loves me. And if I do that, then Pidatzor. Pidatzor means Pidei, redemption, Tzor, the rock. I will experience the redemption of the rock. I will find the redemption of HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. So from the simple case of the Nazir, together with the Nasi, ultimately of B'nai Menashe, to the sin offerings, ultimately to the fact that the Nazir is called a Nazir, even after his Nazirite vow is finished, we learn an incredible life lesson. We all experience failure. All experience failure. And sometimes the most difficult part to failure is not the failure itself, but the feeling that I'm being rejected by God. I'm trying to do something good, and it seems to be the more I try, the more you push me away. What do I do in those circumstances? Number one, get back up. Don't wallow. Dust yourself up. Ubayom, always lashon on the pasuk, v'kidesh es rosho bayomahu. Get back up. And after you get back up, lest you think that the failed experience is just wasted time, in the garbage, nothing to get from it, understand that even when the Nazirite vow is over, you're still called a Nazir. We grow and we gain from all of our experiences, especially our failures. And at the end of the day, if you want the secret to success in one little verse, just know that if you're looking for Nesius, if you're looking to be lifted up in life, you have to become the offspring of Menashe. You have to learn the art of letting go and quote unquote, forgetting the failures of the past. Because those who are able to move on and move forward will once again feel the love and redemption of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should be Zochem Yiratzeh Hashem. First of all, to experience failures. I know that it sounds like a strange bracha. But you know, it's the same way. I often say, like, when people come to be Menachem Avol, when they come to go ahead and, you know, console a mourner, people have this phrase, you should only have simchas. No one only has simchas. That's like a bracha levatala, right? No one only has simchas, right? We all have failures. And I say it absolutely with a complete heart. We should all experience failures because because success is only meaningful when it comes in the backdrop of failure. But we should be zochem Yiratzeh Hashem to internalize these lessons. We should be zochem Yiratzeh Hashem that when we fail, to get back up, dust ourselves off, learn from our experiences, and once again find the courage to move forward.